Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is writer, illustrator, artist, Mike Curato, and we're talking about his latest graphic novel, Flamer. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me.
I was pretty amazed when I read this, because it's so well done. You know, it's so subtle and sensitively done. Let's set it up, the sort of basic outline. Now, I don't want to give away too many plot points for the audience, so I'm going to try to avoid that. But this is about a young boy named Aiden. How old would you say he is?
He's 14.
Okay. Yeah. And he's away at Boy Scout camp. And he's coming to terms slowly and painfully with his sexuality. And it's an incredibly, at times, painful thing to watch because of everybody else around him being such jerks. Talk to me about that.
Sure. Well, you know, it's partially based on my own experiences. It is a fictional book, but I definitely went through a lot of stuff that Aiden went through. The book is also set in 1995, just to add some more context. But I think it's still relevant today. Living in, you know, parts of the country that aren't as accepting as others. So he's struggling externally with others and internally also with his beliefs, with his religion.
It's a complex story. Even his parents, he has issue with this. But what you've captured in this book is something I don't think a lot of people talk about, is just when a person is just starting to awaken to what their sexual preference or sexuality may be. And that's a really confusing and difficult time as it is.
Right.
But to be gay, and especially at a boys' summer camp, is particularly a minefield.
Yeah, it can be pretty stressful.
but you know, in the afterward, you ended up saying that you actually you really enjoyed Scouts and you went all the way through to Eagle.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, I got a lot out of it and I made a lot of really good friends. And I actually wasn't out at all when I was in Scouts. That happened later. So part of this book was imagining what that might have been like.
Wow. He has dreams and fantasies, some of which are really cool, that are generally, you know, homophilic, you know, the really, beautiful and sort of interesting things, but he refuses to, he doesn't even want to think about the fact that he could be gay. As Mark, there's a quote in your book: "I know I'm not gay. Gay boys like other boys. I hate boys. They're mean and scary." And that, to me, sort of summed up the whole confusing part of this, living in a society that's not accepting, because you end up hating yourself for what you desire.
Right, right.
So,
well, I'm glad that came across. Sorry.
He has a cool friend, which we never see, which I always sort of want to see, Violet. Talk to me about Violet.
Yeah, Violet is Aiden's pen pal. And she's kind of his lifeline to the outside world. He gets a letter from her every few days. He sends her a letter. And so she's also kind of his moral compass. And I think it's, as you pointed out about how he hates boys, he does feel more comfortable with girls. And so Violet represents a lot of, like,
right,
you know, this accepting female character, but also someone who he can't access. So I think there's some layers there. And one interesting side note is that Violet is based on one of my best friends, Lara, who the book is dedicated to. And we were pen pals growing up.
Was it one of those things you could say anything to her?
Yeah. Well, I didn't, you know, I didn't come out to her for a long time, too. I didn't come out to anyone for a long time. And I remember the stress of telling her and being scared to death, like that she wouldn't be my friend anymore, which deep down I knew she wouldn't do that, but you know, there's like always this chance, right? And she was obviously cool with it.
Did she give you hell for not telling her earlier?
No.
Because she is a good friend.
She is, yeah, she is. And also, there's a funny little scene where he's talking about when Violet double dog dared him to sniff pepper.
If
people really do sneeze a lot, like in the cartoons, and he discovered that people do sneeze that much. And that's a page right out of my journal.
You did it?
Laura double dog dared me to sniff pepper, and I did, and it was harrowing, I'll tell you.
I've inhaled pepper by mistake, like just a little bit, and it is not a good thing to do.
No, it was top five, one of the dumbest things I've ever done willingly in my life.
Getting back to Flamer. First of all, even the title is great in this book because it's sort of that whole sort of negative vocabulary that goes on when boys hang out, faggot, gay, right. Flamer, and stuff like that. But he turns it around, and we're not going to tell how,
at the
end. But besides all that, I mean, he's got negative body self-images. Like I said, he comes from a tough place. His family is in a really tough situation. And and there's just like a camp, it's part of the thing, but there's a lot of physical harassment and stuff like that and things that, I mean, he's going through this complicated thing and he's just sort of thrown in there and he's got to try to make sense of it. And he does. He gets through, you know, with a vision. I mean, he literally has a sort of an amazing vision, which we're not going to talk about. Did it take something like that? Can you talk about coming out and how difficult it is to people who don't understand, who've never had a friend come out? You write about that at the end of the book. It is a tough thing.
Yeah. Well, before I mention that, since you brought up the title, there is a visual thread of fire throughout the book.
It's the only use of color in the book, too.
Yeah, usually. Sometimes there will be an inanimate object or something that I'll have painted red to kind of draw attention to that for the viewer. But yeah, I love the wordplay on it. I mean, once you read the book, you'll get it. But anyway, yes, coming out is hard. And I think even if you are brought up in a family or a town that is accepting of queer people, you know, our country as a whole is not, the world as a whole is not accepting. And just knowing, you know, even if you, you know, I live in like Northampton, Mass right now. It's a pretty queer place. But even still, you know, every day I walk around with the knowledge that there are many places in this country that I wouldn't feel safe just like walking around being myself. So I think that's really what's at the core of it, is even if you have found your community, even if you are getting love and support in your life, just knowing that you are hated by strangers in the world, like there are people that would actually do you harm, that's really disconcerting, and it's a lot to carry. And if you don't know that you will be accepted and you don't know that you'll get love and support no matter what, then that's terrifying, right? That's like, can I even survive this?
Well, there's so many messages that you're sort of fed via the media and your social life as you grow up. In Aiden's case, the church. And your parents, and then like your friends, again, just using those words all the time. It's tough for you to just accept who you are. And then again, I mean, he had such a negative body image too, that you thought he was too fat, too short. This is a quote from the book, not man enough, not white enough. I'll never be safe anywhere. He hated high school. How did you feel in high school?
I was not a big fan of high school. I mean, Aiden is right about to enter high school. He is the summer before freshman year. So like middle school is awful. and he can't even like imagine what high school is going to be like. Plus he's going from Catholic school to public school, which is something that I went through. Like I went to Catholic school up to eighth grade, and then I went to public school, and it was like, oh, there's my dog.
What's her name?
Oh, that's Leia. So in case you hear me barking.
I love it. Okay. What kind of dog?
She's just saying hi. She just wants some airtime.
Okay, cool.
Don't
worry about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
high school was rough. I wasn't out in high school either, but, you know, I always kind of had my identity kind of lingering in the background, you know, and I just kept like ignoring it, ignore. And the only times that, you know, I was forced to think about it was when people would say like really cruel stuff to me. So I just always had this negative association with being gay or being queer.
Yep.
And I didn't know what good would come of coming out, you know, until I started seeing other parts of the world and like meeting different types of people.
Did you know other gay kids in high school? Like,
no, I think
everybody was,
well, no one was out in high school when I was in high school, but I could tell. And I've had a few surprises of people who have come out since then. I'm like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But there were some people that I'm like, okay, I know they're gay, but we're not going to talk about it. Like, it just didn't feel safe to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where you grew up in high school, there was no resources for gay kids. There was no.
No GSA. No. Nothing. I mean, it was not okay. It was not okay to be out. No. And I grew up outside New York City. You know, I was like 20 miles outside New York, and it's a very, macho, Catholic, just kind of like old school New York suburb, and people just didn't truck with that.
Jesus.
So I felt very, you know, and also I'm mixed race. I'm white and Asian. So is Aiden in the book, which is why he says I'll never be white enough. So already I knew I stuck out, you know, not that I was the only person of color, in my school. I wasn't. But it's predominantly like a white suburb. Oh, yeah. So if you weren't white, you felt that.
Oh, wow.
And it was always pointed out, like not always in like a mean way, but just like, you know, I wouldn't even be thinking about them. They're like, oh, you know, because you're Asian. It's like, let's just remind you, like, oh, remember how you're different? And it's like, oh yeah, thank you. And I forgot.
Oh my God.
So, you know, I think,
I know it's like when I think about high school and mine was a long ways ago. Anything that made you stand out was anathema. I mean,
you
basically want to just quietly pass through the corridors, take your classes and get home.
That's the thing. You know, someone was just telling me how in high school they did anything they could to stand out and to like try to be heard, and they felt invisible. And so they would do all these things. And I was like, oh my God, I did everything I could to try to be invisible.
The opposite. Yeah.
Because people would just come for me. And it's like, I'm not doing any, like, I'm just being myself, going about my day. Like,
yeah.
Can I just...
I just want to get
can
home.
Can I just get through the day?
Yeah, I'm going to get out of here and get on with my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I want to talk more about Flamer, because the interesting thing is all this is occurring around and through a great camp story, too. Because I actually learned things about orienteering, knots and lashings. Mm-hmm. There's a bear and how to hang up your food. I mean, and building baskets. There's a lot of great camp lore in this book too.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much an homage. Like, I did love my scouting experience, and I miss summer camp sometimes, you know. It was great. I had so much fun, and I did in a way that I didn't have fun in school. And I went to a troop that was in another town. So these were not kids that I went to school with. So it was kind of a way for me to start over, you know.
Yeah. And there were there were people who there who were at least not getting on your case. There was even a scoutmaster, Jacob. Who seemed really cool. However, he ends up getting canned because he is gay.
Oh, I think you're crossing two characters. So there's the scoutmaster, Jacob, and then there's the orienteering Marybeth counselor, Ted.
I'm horrible at remembering names.
The one that gets outed. Yeah. The scoutmaster is cool. And I think one thing to mention about Jacob is he is really supportive of his scouts, but maybe doesn't know everything going on, right? Which I think is very much the case with a lot of adults.
I want to ask you about that, because a lot of really vicious shit goes on. And are the scout leaders not aware of it, or are they just ignoring it?
I think both. You know, I'm sure there are people that want to be helpful, you know, that are genuinely concerned about their scouts. And, you know, I've encountered adults throughout my life who saw that in me, who saw I was different and didn't like it and, you know, might look the other way. I'll say for the most part, adults usually would intervene on my behalf, but wouldn't go the full way. You know, where people are like, you guys, you got to stop that.
Yeah.
But not really sit down and be like, hey, let's talk about how completely messed up that is, like what you've done.
Right.
Just like, no, you can't do that. And it's almost like the subtext was, you can't do that in front of me.
Exactly right.
Where it's like, go harass each other.
But not on my, not in my vicinity. So I don't have to see it.
That's not how it was in my troop.
Oh, good.
But in my second troop, anyway, because I started off in another one, which was terrible. But, you know, there were adults that, I don't know, there's a range, I'll say.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
You'll listen to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is writer, illustrator, artist Mike Curato. And we are talking about his latest graphic novel, Flamer, which is fantastic. Mike, this is a really long book. It's a major work. I want to talk practically. Is this the longest piece you've ever done?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all my other books are, you know, 40-page picture books.
Right. And we'll talk about that in a second. Talk to me about storyboarding. Like, talk to me about storyboarding this. Did you have to actually sit there?
Sure.
Did you have a limitation on the number of pages that you could do or what?
No, you know, if you want to get real nerdy,
I do.
Your book needs to be in, it needs to be divisible by 16 because of the way the pages are glued together. You get 8 pages that are bound together, and then that makes 16 pages. So it's called a signature, and then all those get glued into the spine. So anyway. But there wasn't like a hard limit, like you can only have 350 pages. It was more just like, okay, once we get close to something divisible by 16, that's when we need to edit down or add some more, you know what I mean? So there aren't any blank pages. But it actually happened to work out really well. And I did have to storyboard out the entire book.
Oh, God.
And I'll tell
you. And the reason is, and this is part of the reason I also like this book, there's a visual flow to the book. There's a visual flow to the look of the book that's used for dramatic effect. And so I just imagine you had to plot that thing all out.
Oh, yeah. And we would call that dramatic effect a page turn. Everything is designed to not just lead people's eye across the page, but then also make you want to turn the page.
Right.
Did you
know that term before you did this?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I
just want to know how arcane this language is.
No, I think that's a pretty well-known term in in publishing, in, okay. in anything that's like visual.
All right.
Anything illustrated, I should say. So picture books, that's very much like a buzz term, like, oh, the page turns. yeah, you know, it's almost like a cliffhanger, like, oh my God, what's going
to
happen?
Yeah, you so
know?
You got to get the, you got to get the reader to like, oh.
Yeah.
And there's a great feeling is when you get a good page turn, you really feel like you're watching a movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, film is definitely a big influence on my work. And that's how I had to approach this book is like, okay, well, what would happen if this were a movie? Because when you write it as a manuscript. As a script, you know, like.
Yeah. Like a film script?
Very much like a film script. So everything is, you know, like the person's name and then what they're saying. If it's inner dialogue, if it's speech, and then instead of like, you know, cinematographer notes, you'd have like art notes, like, okay, in this scene, this is happening. So
did you have to edit a lot? In other words, are there sections that you originally had in that you had to edit out?
No, I'm not even trying to toot my own horn here. There was very, very sparse editing on the text. And my editor is great. Her name's Laura Godwin, and she just really trusts me. And, of course, there was editing because, you know, it's like 366 pages. Of course, I'm going to, like, spell something wrong or have a grammatical error. But for the most part... it's not far from what I sold the book as. But we did have a bunch of art edits. And when I was thumbnailing out the book, this is my first graphic novel, so there was a lot to wrap my head around. So I sketched out the book. I had an assistant who helped me with this, Sabrina Montenegro, and she helped me lay out all the type, and we discovered quite painfully that there wasn't enough room for all the words. Like, I just wasn't used to speech bubbles and everything like that. So I ended up adding 30 pages to the book, not of text, but of visuals to make room
in
the panels to fit the words. But it's funny because I can't imagine it being 30 pages less now.
I know it sort of swings at the length that it is, it is very cinematic in the way it flows.
Yeah.
Now we're going to run out of time, and I haven't gotten a chance to talk. You've done a whole other series of children's books, the Little Elliot series. Talk to me about Little Elliot.
Yeah. So Little Elliot, I also write and illustrate. Little Elliot is a little polka dotted elfin who lives in New York in the late 1930s. And he has a best friend who is a mouse. And, you know, the series really revolves around friendship and family. And, you know, I think kids really connect with him because he's so small. Like, that's his whole shtick. It's like, he's small in the big city, and everything's about the hurdles that he has to overcome. You know, and we all feel small in the world sometimes. So he's very relatable, and he loves cupcakes. So, you know, what's not to love?
You've got 5 books in that series, right, already?
Yeah, there are 5 books, yeah. And then I also illustrate for other authors.
You've illustrated a lot of other books, all the way to Havana. What's your favorite? You contributed to What's Your Favorite Color by Eric Carle, The Power of One by Trudy Ludwig. The list goes on. What did you start with? Did you start just doing illustrations? And how did, I mean, that's a tough business to break into, is young people's books.
Yeah. I actually went to college for illustration, and, I rediscovered my love of children's books when I was, an illustration student. And that's what I realized I wanted to do. That was the big goal. I wanted to do everything, but that was like the dream. And it took me 10 years to break into the industry.
Wow.
I worked as a graphic designer, out of school. Well, after like a year of being a barista, and then I got a design job.
This sounds like a script in and of itself. He started as a barista and then worked.
That old dog.
Could you be more classic as an artist?
That was pretty amazing. I moved to Seattle after
college. Oh, no.
Classic Seattle things. Like,
oh, my God.
I was a barista, then I worked.
I want to see this as a graphic novel.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Come on. This is the part of the story I want to know.
I worked at Microsoft.
Oh, my God.
See, I did some stuff for Amazon. Yeah, it's like, oh, my God, this is too...
That's hilarious. Ridiculous. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, you got another book you've illustrated coming out, I think, in 2021, The Sherry Godmother by Samantha Berger. Do you like working with other people, like illustrating other people's work?
I do. I love it. It's a really different feeling. First of all, someone's already done the hard work of writing a story. So thanks for that. That's half the battle. But I really love to kind of go back and forth, like do a book that I've written, do a book that someone else has written.
Yeah.
It kind of helps clear the palette for me. And it's a different challenge, right? Because someone hands you this manuscript that you now need to create a visual world for and add to it, right? So I think it's really fun. And it's kind of easier in a way because someone's already set some parameters for you.
Yep, yep.
Whereas if you're making your own book, it's like, oh, you need to make your own rules.
We're completely out of time. My guest tonight is writer, illustrator, artist, Mike Cuado. And we're talking about his latest graphic novel. And this is a great graphic novel, Flamer. Mike, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.